Hi, thanks for listening to Alt Latino. In any given year, there are more than 100,000 albums released. That's 100,000. That's nearly 2,000 albums a week. We know it's impossible to keep up with that much music, so NPR's All Songs Considered is here to help. Each week, our friends Bob Boylan and Robin Hilton find the best songs for you to fall in love with. Subscribe to All Songs Considered now at npr.org/podcasts. From NPR Music, this is Alt Latino. I'm Felix Contreras. Jasmine Garst is away this week. And this week, we're going to take a deeper listen to a new album from Fania Records called Calentura. It's a collection of remixes of classic Fania tracks by some of the hottest DJs and producers out there right now. And with us to guide us through this project is Uproot Andy, a DJ who made the track we're listening to right now. Andy, welcome.
Thank you.
And we're honored to have with us John Fausti, a studio engineer, chief engineer, who recorded many classic Fania tracks from the 1970s. John joins us from Tampa, Florida. John.
Hello, good afternoon, Andy. Hi, Felix.
Today's show is going to be a little bit different. We're going to talk over the music pretty much the whole time because there's so much amazing adaptation and creation going on that we want to point it out. We want to remind you, as usual, you can hear the songs on our website, and we'll give you that website at the end of this show. So to get us going, Andy, this is your track we're starting with. Tell us the name of the album and what we're listening to.
The album is Calentura, and this is Eso Se Baila Así by Willie Colon and Hector Lavoe. This is the Uproot Andy remix.
Let's listen to a little bit of it, and then we're going to play the original so we can draw some contrast. And now the original from the 1968 album by Willie Colon featuring Hector Lavoe. So Andy, what you kept pretty much intact was at the beginning, that horn riff at the beginning, correct?
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of like what we call in electronic music the drop. In dance music, it's really about creating those moments of tension and that kind of explosion of release to get people moving. So this song really had that sort of built into it, you know, in a real nice way. I think it's always what drew me to this song since way back. So yeah, I think that was kind of the reason I wanted to flip it for the dance floor.
What I really liked about it was first part of your version of the song is, you know, is a play on that horn riff at the beginning.
Yeah.
And then I get about a minute 30, you change over to the, like a supercharged Son Montuno almost, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's the Boogaloo. It's funny, this is a song, this is really a Boogaloo about not liking Boogaloo.
Right.
Here's Hector Lavoe saying, Boogaloo no va conmigo, and the band's playing it and he's making it irresistible. You know, Boogaloo, I imagine a lot of the more maybe hardcore Caribbean, you know, music fans or Caribbean musicians might have thought Boogaloo to be a bit of maybe a watered down, you know, version of that kind of music. So, you know, and in some ways I think what we do, for a lot of classic salsa heads, you know, or cumbia heads or whatever kind of music we're remixing, often might think we're ruining the originals when we approach it and add electronics and stuff. Salsa was a real genre crossing idea, you know, it was mixing all these different genres and a lot of people, you know, maybe thought it was ruining Son Montuno and things like that. And you know, I think what's happening now with Latin alternative electronic music is somewhat similar to what happened in the development of salsa.
John, what do you remember from those sessions? Were the musicians understanding or at least realizing that they were onto something new and something new and creative? I mean, what were those sessions like, the conversations and about the music itself?
I think so. To answer your question, yes, everybody was excited about it.
Now, what about the musicians themselves, okay? We want to hear some stories about, you know, what they were like when they weren't busy making music. I mean, were they fun to hang out with? Did they tell jokes?
Oh, yeah.
So what were the studio sessions like?
It was like a unit. I mean, Willie counted on those guys to read his mind, and they certainly did. With all his ideas. I mean, Willie was one of the biggest innovators in salsa that I know of.
Is that something that you picked up on listening to recordings, Andy?
I mean, Willie Colon, he's just such a great composer, you know? I mean, these things are, it's like, salsa was something for me, you know, you grow up and it's around, it's in the world, you hear it, but it's like, I didn't really maybe understand what it had for me. I knew it was a style of music, it was probably on sitcoms and then playing in restaurants sometimes, but I never really listened to it as something that would speak to me. When I finally kind of started paying attention, it was Willie Colon records, and it's so powerful, like so kind of emotional and like compositionally profound, you know, that it just changed my perception of music entirely, I would say.
Now, even though this show is about remixes, let's hear a classic Willie Colon track on its own. This is the iconic trombone riff from La Murga, which was recorded in 1970.
Started listening to Willie Colon records, it felt like hearing what I always wanted jazz to sound like, you know. It was like, because I grew up like sampling jazz records to make hip-hop tracks, and hearing salsa was like, oh, the whole track is good already. I don't have to cut out parts, you know. It was dance music, you know. It was direct, it was to the point, but it was still musically intelligent and creative, you know. It wasn't cheesy to me. I don't know. Murga pa' aquí, murga pa' allá. Esta es la murga de Panamá. Oye, muchacha, vamos a bailar. Esta es la murga de Panamá. Esta es la murga de Panamá. Esta es la murga de Panamá. Oye, yo quiero bailar. Esta es la murga de Panamá. Ey, Panamá, y Panamá, y Panamá, Panamá, Panamá. Esta es la murga de Panamá. Ataca, yo.
So again, a lot of stuff to unpack there. And we do have someone from the era, John, you know, and I have to say that my own connection to the music is that I just became such a super fan of the music when it was being released in the early to mid 70s, when I started paying attention to it as a kid, a teenager out in California. And I'm doing this show because I'm such a music geek and a record geek, and I would read the liner notes, and the one name that kept popping up on those Fania albums was John Fausti, his recording engineer. I kept thinking, like, who is that guy, right? And what did he do? And John, like, what was your role in those early recordings back then?
Well, like you said, I was the engineer. A young Jewish guy from Westchester County in New York, just happened to be in the right place at the right time to fall into the Fania monster. And Fania had just bought a studio, formerly RKO Studios, and turned into Good Vibration Studios. They were looking for a guy, and I got auditioned and got the gig as chief engineer of the studio. It's funny you say that, Andy, that you're changing the music and some hardcore salseros are going to say no. Andy, when Felix told me that we were going to look at a record that was some of my original multi-tracks and remixed, my initial reaction to him without hearing anything was, oh my God, what is this going to sound like? I mean, how are they going to transcend the intention of the music not having been there? When I started listening to this record, Calentura, I mean, they're not my mixes changed. They're totally new pieces of music with slivers from the original tracks. And it makes it very interesting listening. And not only that, but I find myself getting hypnotized when I'm listening to these tracks. And it doesn't at all attempt to remix and present the same material. It's completely new to me.
Cool.
I mean, does that make any sense to you, Felix?
Absolutely. I think it's significant and very open-minded and to have your blessing, so to speak, to be able to follow through with this, because I hear a lot of amazing work deconstructing and then using those elements to create something completely new, very much, and I agree with Andy, very much in the way that what the Fania folks were doing with what you guys were doing in the early 70s.
We were mixing jazz with Son Montuno. And we made salsa out of like a Frankenstein monster, and it grew and grew and grew into, something really exciting and danceable.
Merengue! Like this song, Pun Pun Gatalu. This is the great Celia Cruz singing with Willie Colon's band. And now this, a remix from Canyon Cody and Captain Planet. Wait for it. Azúcar. But this one doesn't necessarily have a severe tempo change because...
No, it's about the same tempo.
Yeah, that original was pretty fast.
Typical merengue.
Right, and that's something that's interesting because nowadays salsa has sort of become canonized in a specific kind of salsa, certain songs that really capture what salsa was all about, but... Really, at the time, these bands were playing all different rhythms. They were playing merengue, and they were playing cumbias, and they were playing boogaloos and mambos, and salsa was just sort of a way of trying to pull all those different influences together.
And is this what you would consider like a trap influence as well?
Yeah, for sure. You know, hip hop has slowed down so much to the point where now it's sort of fast again, if you know what I mean. It's halftime, double time, that kind of gray area, and that's what he's kind of playing with here. He's playing with that merengue being really fast and half-timing it with the trap hip-hop influence.
I love what he did with the trombones, that two octaves below that, those pedal tones. Felix, another thing that really sticks out in my mind is the sound of Willie Jose Mangual and Milton Cardona's voice doing the backing vocals.
Let's go to the next track. This is Justo Betancourt with Pa Bravo Yo. Is this one of your tracks, John?
Yeah, it is.
All right, so here's the original.
Pa Bravo Yo, yo que soy mulato oscuro, tengo la mente en mi sitio y estoy bueno de salud. Que tengo sentimiento, tengo sangre de africano y canto con gran virtud.
Yeah, I like that classic intro with the almost like a signature sound, the two trumpets.
It's Pacheco's sound, but with the trombone in there.
Johnny Pacheco, the arranger, and
yes.
There's so much going on, especially on this track in particular. It's like the horns are providing the place of the vocal, the chorus, the coro, because they're so meticulously arranged and those intervals are just so artistic. It's a nice counterpoint to what he's singing. He's almost singing off of that.
In the coros in this song, it's the unmistakable sound of Yayo el Indio with that high voice and Alberto Santiago in the middle, and Justo singing the bottom voice in the coro.
Bravo, permíteme aplaudir la forma de mi sentimiento.
And now a remix by the crew called Dengue 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 from Lima, Peru.
On the remix, you're going to hear that rhythm section, the same rhythm section that's on the old record, but everything that's on top of it is added.
I'm going to really geek out on this. These two sections, it's almost like they've elaborated or elongated. They've elongated the timbal cowbell part, because the first measures is the first part of the cowbell part, and that second part is the second part of the cowbell part, but like twice as long. It taps into the funkiness of the original, you know, the whole funky rhythm that was there. And what he did inadvertently on this part is that by repeating that and including the cowbell part, to me, John, like he created a really cool bongocero cowbell part. The bongo player at one point gets up and starts hitting the cowbell on a don tiquito, tiquito. And the more innovative cowbell players would get that part and create something different. This part underneath, if you listen closely, there's a really cool cowbell part under there.
I hear what you're saying. It's like on a, it's there's too many bulks and not enough dickies in the part that he manufactured there.
So when you say that, using that vocalizing technique, what is the original? What would it sound like?
Pop, ticky pop, deep pop, ticky pop, ticky pop, ticky pop, deep pop.
Too many bulks.
You know, they've slowed it down.
Absolutely.
Given it this stretched out, lowered, and you know, darker, they've really focused in on the minor chord parts. But they've double timed it as well. So in the end, it's really faster, you know, in some ways. And it's also very influenced by this Chicago footwork sound rhythmically in terms of what they're doing with the kick drums.
And the kick drum, interestingly, there are parts of the... like the cascara, the side of the timbal, there's part of that pattern on that kick drum part.
I mean, those rhythms, of that kind of dotted rhythm is like, a lot of ways it's, it comes out of Cuban music. It's rumba, and it's the basis of salsa, but it's also the basis of Jamaican dancehall and reggaeton and so much of like our modern electronic music and pretty much any music that's rooted in the Caribbean and Africa.
When we think about this music, it's important also to consider the sociological effects it had in raising the consciousness of the, in particular, the young Puerto Rican and Cuban musicians and the population in New York at the time, early 70s, late 60s, early 70s in particular. By that point, you know, obviously the civil rights movement had... already had a profound effect on the rest of the country in terms of African-American population. Out in California, where I was living, early 70s was all about the farm worker movement and recognizing, you know, the Mexican-American experience and its contribution to society. And then out here on the East Coast, it was all about this music and raising that consciousness. John, what were some of the feelings going through the studios or even in the clubs or just in the record stores? I mean, could you feel that back then?
Absolutely. And there were record stores, actually. That's not supposed to be funny, but there were record stores, especially in Times Square Station on the west side on Broadway. I think socially, the music really gave a reason for people to get together and leave their homes, to go out to a dance hall like the Corso or Barney Googles or Casa Borinquen in Brooklyn, or I'm surprised I'm remembering all the names of these clubs, but and I didn't really go to them except to see a band that I was recording at the moment. And the people had a reason to get dressed up and socialize and hear this music and dance to this music. And I think it was a great substitute for being poor and being on the street and being in a gang, and similar to what Boogaloo did just before salsa.
Okay, we're going to play another original Fania track. Now listen to the detail of all the drums. This is one of yours, John, a song by vocalist Mon Rivera called Ya Llegó. And I want to use this to illustrate how you revolutionized the technique of recording Afro-Caribbean music. Now, what inspired you to move those mics from over the band and directly onto the drums themselves?
You know, the old one mic or two or three mic area miking, it was called, was good. I mean, if you had a good room, that worked. But the clarity that I wanted to achieve on the rhythm section could only be done with multiple microphones. So you have close miking technique as opposed to area miking technique. And just getting everything clear so you could hear it right up in your face was something very important and for dancing. And if the mix is no good and you don't hear every instrument and every part of each instrument clearly, it's not going to sound like a unit like it should. In mixing, the old mixes of the area mic type recordings where you'd have the brass all on one side and the rhythm section on the other side and in stereo, I mean, it didn't happen right away. It happened over the years of working with people like Willie Colon and Ray Barreto and Johnny Pacheco and Bobby Valentin, and I could go on for, that would be a whole nother show, all my teachers. Willie Rosario, to get that all audible in a stereo mix, I had to develop a stereo spread. So I was thinking, what would make things readily audible? Well, if you take the timbales, for example, and put them on the left side, and the cencero, which is the handbell, on the right side, then the timbale bell and the handbell offset each other left and right. And then, of course, the congas, being the backbone of the rhythm, go in the center, so they're clear right there. And then the bongo and the bell player, the bongo player switches to bongo, you can move that in a little bit from far right in, a little bit left of right. The piano in stereo, the bass in the center, and the same thing with the brass. So it's kind of, it's like a frequency range match between the left and the right side. If you have something high frequency on the left side, then something on the high frequency on the right side is going to sound more symmetrical to the listener. And I think that's very important in the mix.
That's the secret sauce, man. Guys, I can't thank you enough for being part of the show today. This was really something. This was something I've always wanted to do for such a long time. And this great album, Calentura, was the perfect opportunity to bring in the history of what the music was about and some behind-the-scenes details that I just ate up. Thank you so much. And Andy, your perspective of what these incredibly creative DJs and producers are doing with the music now, yourself included. So gentlemen, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
want to remind you that you can hear all the tracks we played today in their entirety on our website at npr.org/altlatino. And don't forget to write in to us on Facebook and Twitter. Tell us some of your favorite Fania tracks. Tell us what you think of the album and anything else you want to talk about when it comes to Fania, salsa, or just music in general. We are NPR's Alt Latino. Jasmine Garst will be back next week. We're ending the show with the ever fabulous, magnificent voice of Celia Cruz. This has been Alt Latino. Guys, again, thank you so much for coming.
Oye, quito, oye, quito, oye.